What if happiness isn't about waiting for better circumstances, but mastering how you respond to your current reality? This revolutionary perspective forms the foundation of Brooks and Winfrey's approach to happiness. Rather than viewing happiness as a distant destination requiring perfect conditions, they present it as an active practice available to anyone willing to develop the right skills. Happiness isn't a single emotional state, but rather a blend of three essential macronutrients: enjoyment, conscious pleasure shared with others, satisfaction, accomplishment through effort, and purpose, meaning that helps us face challenges with hope. Paradoxically, purpose often emerges through suffering rather than avoiding it. The most liberating insight? Happiness requires accepting unhappiness as part of life. Positive and negative emotions aren't opposite ends of a spectrum, but separate dimensions operating independently. We experience purely positive emotions about 41% of the time, purely negative about 16%, and mixed feelings the remainder. Different activities produce different emotional blends. Socializing brings high positive and low negative feelings, while commuting yields the opposite. Eliminating unhappiness isn't a prerequisite for happiness. Both can coexist, and unhappiness often contains seeds of growth. We each have a natural blend of happiness and unhappiness that places us into one of four quadrants. Mad scientists, high positive, high negative, who are intensely engaged. Judges, low positive, low negative, who remain steady. Cheerleaders, high positive, low negative, who celebrate good and minimize bad. And poets, low positive, high negative, who notice threats and process deeply. Understanding your profile isn't about changing your nature. It's about recognizing tendencies to manage them effectively. Negative emotions deserve gratitude. They keep us alive. Our brains dedicate specific regions to processing negative emotions because threats pose greater survival risks than benefits from positive experiences. When properly managed, emotions like regret sharpen decision-making. Creative genius often emerges from suffering. Research shows that among great composers like Beethoven, increased sadness corresponded with creating additional major compositions. Studies reveal that second happiest people often outperform the very happy in academics and career earnings. Pursuing happiness at the expense of unhappiness is misguided. Without unhappiness, we wouldn't survive, learn, or generate good ideas. Viktor Frankl discovered in concentration camps that while suffering is inevitable, our response remains our choice. This insight forms the foundation of metacognition, thinking about thinking, which allows us to experience emotions consciously without being controlled by them. Our brains perform three survival functions: detection, perceiving stimuli, reaction, emotional response via the limbic system, and decision, conscious processing through the prefrontal cortex. The four primary negative emotions, sadness, anger, disgust, and fear, each serve protective functions. Metacognition means moving emotional experiences from your limbic system to your prefrontal cortex, like refining crude oil into usable fuel. Counting to 10 when angry gives your prefrontal cortex time to catch up. This doesn't eliminate negative feelings, but helps you understand them and prevent harmful reactions. Between external conditions and your response lies a space where metacognition offers freedom. Though managing emotions during crisis seems unnatural, modern stressors are typically chronic rather than episodic. The key is observing emotions objectively, documenting them, and choosing responses based on preferred outcomes rather than negative feelings. Just as caffeine blocks adenosine receptors, we can substitute positive emotions for negative reactions. Our negativity bias, focusing on criticism while overlooking compliments, helped ancestors survive but distorts modern reality. Gratitude counteracts this by filling negative emotion receptors with positive feelings. Research shows gratitude activates the brain's reward circuit, improves health, strengthens relationships, and cultivates generosity. humor serves as emotional caffeine, blocking negative feelings by creating joy. Our brains detect incongruity, resolve it, and recognize it's non-serious, triggering amusement. In one study, seniors receiving daily jokes felt 42% happier after 8 weeks, with reduced pain and loneliness. Unlike optimism, believing in good outcomes, hope involves personal agency despite circumstances. Studies show hope is more powerful. High hope employees are 28% more likely to succeed at work and 44% more likely to enjoy good health. We exist as two selves, the I self, observer of the world, and the me self, the observed. Most people focus excessively on how others see them, creating emotional instability and anxiety. Self-absorption makes happiness dependent on momentary self-perception and impairs performance in everyday tasks. This concept appears across traditions, from Zen Buddhism's self-forgetting to Hindu pursuit of Atman to Christian teachings about self-denial. Caring about others differs fundamentally from worrying what others think about you. The former is healthy, the latter destructive. We're evolutionarily wired to care about others' opinions because historically, tribal rejection meant death, which explains why social rejection activates the same brain region as physical pain. Envy makes us obsess over what we lack compared to others, damaging well-being despite its evolutionary purpose of gauging social standing. Scholars distinguish between benign envy, admiration driving self-improvement, and malicious envy, destructive thoughts. Neurologically, envy activates the brain's pain center and predicts worse mental health outcomes. With emotional self-management skills in place, we can build the four pillars essential for happiness: family, people we don't choose; friendship, non-kin we deeply love; work, value-creating toil, paid or unpaid; and faith, a transcendent approach to life. These contrast with Thomas Aquinas's idols, money, power, pleasure, and prestige, which merely anesthetize rather than cure. Family relationships deliver our highest highs and lowest lows. Family conflict isn't a problem, but a natural sign that your family matters to you. Like a restaurant bill for a delicious meal, simply the cost of abundant love. While we're taught compatibility prevents conflict in romantic relationships, successful relationships actually require complementarity, differences that round out each other's personalities. Forgiveness is crucial for family happiness. Conditional forgiveness, "I'll forgive when you do X," may seem protective but keeps wounds open. As Buddha noted, holding on to anger is like picking up a burning ember to throw at someone. You burn yourself first. Teaching happiness principles to others helps us absorb them better ourselves, a phenomenon called the protege effect. When we teach, we organize information clearly, fill knowledge gaps, and develop practical examples. Your personal struggles with happiness give you teaching credibility, while your progress inspires others. Love forms the foundation of the happiness journey. Every happiness practice stems from love, for yourself, others, work, and the divine. Love isn't just emotion, but a commitment that becomes automatic with practice. It means showing up consistently, offering compassion when difficult, and choosing kindness during challenges. When facing decisions, simply ask, "What is the most loving thing to do right now?" True happiness comes from becoming CEO of your emotional life, not waiting for external circumstances to change. By managing feelings effectively, focusing outward, and building meaningful connections, you create purpose and joy regardless of circumstances. Each small step builds momentum, with every positive choice reinforcing your commitment to living meaningfully. The journey becomes the destination, a transformed relationship with life itself.